All right. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming out. It's the summer is here. I know some of you have well, many of you probably have not seen my email, but we acknowledge the fact that summer is great for many things, and we actually seem to have had a little bit of spring show up, and which makes up for the extraordinary heat that we had at the East Coast Star Party, which was like a month and a half earlier. But there we are. It's Hampton Roads, weather by Sybil. If you don't like it, well, wait until next year because we get three seasons each year and we never know which ones. Okay. I see we got a lot of new faces and some returners. So I just want to say, in general, thank you all for coming out. We are happy to chat with you. As it's been brought to my attention that calling out new people in a group like this, where we have a tendency to not be the most social and forward leading or individuals, is perhaps not the way to encourage people to come back. However, I do appreciate you coming out. Happy to chat with you all, and we'll have an opportunity to chat periodically, especially if we can get through the material tonight in a timely fashion. That said, whether you're here for your first time or your 10,000th time, if it's the latter one, that's impressive because the club's only 48 years old. But George, the chair and pretty much single point of success for the Refreshments Committee, has put together a great spread back there, which, as Gabe pointed out at last month's meeting, does great duty in making sure people have no sugar and caffeine to get through me talking.
Also, we have t-shirts.
Oh, yes.
Couple, one small, one medium, a couple extra large, and for the t-shirts are $10. They're not a couple dollars off the price. And not a bunch of dollars off the sweatshirt. If you want an extra large sweatshirt, it's only $15. I want to get rid of it. The material around the truck right.
George is tired of carrying it, so discounted prices. All right. Couple other things, please. If you haven't already, it's great that we have a lot of outreach events going on. Please log your volunteer hours, and also out of courtesy to all your fellow astronomers, please take the opportunity to RSVP. Sometimes folks, like especially George and Jeff Thornton, go to an awful lot of outreach events. Sometimes they go out of a sense of duty when they see there aren't a lot of people signed up. If you feel inclined to commit to an event, especially one of our fun big ones like Garden Stars or Boardwalk Astronomy, if you'll put your name down as a yes, I'm going, they might take the opportunity to take the evening off and take their wives to dinner or something. Now, knowing George and Jeff, that probably wouldn't happen. They'll be out there and they'll find another opportunity to take their spouse too. Yes.
Can you take Garden Stars in Gibbsville at the end of this month? That would be an issue.
Probably. Let me jot that down. Remind me after the meeting.
Pretty honest, Bob.
The answer is probably yes. Okay, so great segue. That said, that's all my nonsense for the get-go. Trust me, you'll get plenty more of my nonsense later. So I'm going to turn it over to Jeff Goldstein, our vice president, to talk about his good stuff instead of my nonsense.
Okay. I want you to time me, including let me find this.
Yeah,
This should
two
take
feature
about
presentation.
maybe 2 minutes instead of the usual drawn out this, and then the next month and looking for it. So even for the peanut gallery out there in the audience, there's a share. I'm looking for the share. I can't find it. Okay, right here. And that should be visible to everyone. Everybody out there in the peanut gallery see it. Gotta move this out of the way so we can see
Yeah.
it. Okay. Zoom in a little bit. All right, there we go. So instead of going through each one, I've got this all set up. And if it's anybody that's real new, we can explain each one separately instead of going over the usual rigmarole. How am I doing on time? About 90 seconds so far? Because it usually takes about 5, 10 minutes to go through all this.
30 seconds.
Not bad. Okay. So anyway, the big ones, I will mention the big ones because the big ones are the ones that most of the public go to. Skywatch is the big one, and that's this Saturday. Boardwalk Astronomy, another big one, on the 23rd of June. Okay, so please come out there. That's parking on the boardwalk if you're the first six, and usually they don't even bother us if you got seven cars. So it's nice. Yes, Sam.
So I would love to go to one of these events again. It's just I no longer have transportation to the bus anymore.
Ooh.
That is my biggest hurdle coming back to events.
So that's a great point. And something that we can definitely work on. I will say that we started doing some astronomy carpooling. Last Boardwalk Astronomy, Will Kiff went out and was like, hey, I want to check this thing out. I don't know where I'm supposed to be going, especially because Jeremy gave me conflicting directions to Jeff. Let me just ride with you. And I took him out there with me. We had a blast. So the answer is probably we just need to figure it out. I'd recommend posting something on Groups.io or Discord, and we can...
Definitely Groups.io or Discord, though. So we get more people on Discord.
Just got to get more people on Discord.
All right. Hopefully we mentioned that in new business. anybody out there need a screenshot or anything, go ahead and take it before I take this off. It'll save us from looking it up. And I've tried to distribute everybody a copy. I think I made 20 copies or so, something like that.
Yeah, Jeff?
Yes.
In answer to your question about the dog day summers at the Children's Museum, there is a planetarium in the Children's Museum.
Oh, there is? I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
They mentioned it.
I haven't been in it, but I know it's there.
Okay.
It's a 30-foot planetarium similar to the one at Chesapeake Planetarium.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Huh. Single projector.
Okay. All right. Anybody else with questions or anything? Thank you very much. I will stop sharing and moving right along.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Next, let us go to Rich Roberts, our treasurer, for a treasury report.
Hey. All right. Let me share. All right.
The less of me you can see, the better. It's better than your screen sharing.
So we got let me get back to my notes. I'm sorry, I'm still trying to work here. 13,700 in the bank. That's a decrease of about $1,200. We had 14,975 coming into the month. The big expense was we paid our AL dues, which Astronomical League dues are almost $1,000. For those that don't know, that as members of BBAA, you are also members of the Astronomical League, and the club pays your dues on your behalf, and I do all the registration for you. Yeah, there wasn't much else exciting. We still had some lagging. The final East Coast Star Party expenses cleared, like a check to Chipokes, and some reimbursements to Patrick. We bought some t-shirt stuff. Got two new members joined during the month, bring us to 170 total. All in all, it was a pretty light month treasury-wise, which I was glad for. And that's all I got. This balance is going to go down again significantly next month because I've written the checks for our scholarships. So that totaled $4,500. And they have not cashed yet, but I'm sure they will by next month. That's all I got.
Questions from the floor? Motion to accept. And a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Rich. Next is the secretary's report from Gabe.
Yeah.
Those of you who got the email via the Night Sky Network should have seen the proposed minutes. Go ahead.
All right. So last meeting was a bit interesting because it was pretty standard for most of it. However, as a lot of school tests do over there were I think 8 items of new business. There were a lot. So as a result, we ended up going well over into the time where Jeremy was supposed to talk about solar scopes and solar observing. And so he decided I would use it to make sure he had enough time to do it and do it thoroughly. To move his talk to this meeting. Aside from that, it was a pretty good meeting. Everything went smoothly. I've got a long way to do business. I'm sure that some of those will be mentioned as a little business tonight.
That is the plan. Okay. Any questions?
Second.
We have a motion and a second to accept. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Accepted. Thank you, Gabe. All right.
You're welcome.
Next, Ben, I know you have something for the scholarship committee this evening.
We're waiting for our recipient.
Okay. So scholarship committee has met. There is money, and there are some questions that the scholarship committee is trying to iron out. Is that an accurate description that we hope?
Well, we have one of the recipients on their way.
Okay.
So
all right.
We'll present that when she arrives.
Excellent. But probably normally we have them give a talk to us. However, next month, as Jeff has already alluded to, we're going to be at the picnic.
Which works as well.
Which could work, yeah. They can have a burger. All right. Okay. Next, we have the Alcor, who is not here. Apparently, Bruce has decided if he misses two meetings in a row, he's going to donate a fabulous prize, which is fantastic. So the only thing that we have from the Alcor is, hey, do some stuff in the Astronomical League. It's a lot of fun. If you're not sure what you want to do when you go out and look at the night sky, the Astronomical League has a lot of programs from the beginner level all the way to the advanced level that can give you an opportunity to kind of drive you like a merit badge or an achievement for astronomy. And you get a fancy pin, which is, or at least a certificate to commemorate your achievement, which is a lot of fun. I will otherwise yield the floor to him when he gets back on that. As far as the East Coast Star Party Committee, again, Bruce isn't here, but I will say, as one of the other members of the committee, just a reminder, we are having the East Coast Star Party for fall. It is going to be in November, and it is going to be the first weekend of November, so since we go Thursday through Sunday, that means that the November meeting of the Back Bay Amateur Astronomers will be out in the field in Chippokes. We will try and stream it if we can. If we can't, then I encourage you to come out and visit. It's a lot. It is a good time, and the hot dog machine will be rolling. All right. Observing reports. Kent.
So it's globular season now, right?
Yeah.
In the Gabriel, where I live in Kempsville, and it's galaxy season. I'm out of business, so I'm up at Delmar Stars. I can only see about third magnitude from my home. So globulars are welcome. M3, I always think of that as the first globular of the season. And it's a beautiful globular cluster in almost any telescope. Next up would be M13, which is famous, emerging. Just to the left of that, to the north of that, is M92, which actually has higher surface brightness than M13 because it's smaller than all the dimms, of course. And of course, you can't get M5 in surface. That's a great popular, sort of underrated. But one that's really underrated is a Coma Berenices, a constellation. You think of galaxies because it's all sorts of them.
I know exactly which one you're thinking of.
M53.
Yeah.
Right next to it, 1 degree away from it, is NGC 5053. Wow, this is 9.1 magnitude. I challenge you before. I have a 25-inch out tonight, sir, in Virginia Beach. I cannot see it. No. I have seen it before, but I challenge anybody. It's easy fun. 1 degree from M53, which is 100. NGC 5053, 9.1 magnitude, surface brightness, 14.9 magnitude. Surface brightness, of course, is when, you know, a starlight, when you see a star pinpoint this ninth magnitude, you spread that out to half the size of the moon, and suddenly it's not ninth magnitude, and it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I just want to point out, like, I have also seen that. I actually saw it for the first time just past Stamp River in the spring in the 10 inch. But when I say that, like, this thing is like it's small, it's very small too. But like literally, all you see is like it looks like a space on spiral galaxy. Like that's the kind of vibe you get. Like you barely notice that there's a little circular patch.
You can't see any stars.
That's just the other night. Dr. Gibson, he's
I look back in my notes in 2016 with the 25-inch coin jot, which was a 6.5 magnitude, and I said, barely visible. So this thing is going to think. However, I could see, you might see individual stars, but the whole cluster is so elusive. That's all I have.
Challenge. All right, Kent's challenge for the month is NGC 5053.
Good luck.
All right. Any other observing reports? David?
When and where is the paper?
I'm glad you asked. I was going to follow the end with this, but so the picnic for everyone who is planning on coming out, and all members are invited. We're going to be having the annual summer picnic on June 17th. That is a Saturday.
July
17th, which is not June, but it is a Saturday. July 17th, yes. 18th? Good Lord. All right, whatever.
It's on that there sheet.
Yeah. All right. July 18th.
Elizabeth River Park.
At Elizabeth River Park. That part at least. All right. So strike the previous from the record. We're going to be July 18th, nominally setting up around 10 o'clock, and then we'll be eating around, well, probably between 11 and 1. We'll keep the food rolling. We'll see if we can find a place to power up the hot dog machine so that everyone can get their fix. We'll be out at Elizabeth River Park is where we have Saturday, Sunday. Normally now at the end of the month, this one's going to be in the middle of the month. We'll probably have some solar telescopes out there as well.
Where the shelter are we
at? We're in the Egret shelter, but look for the BBA. Same one as last time. So you'll see us out there with the big BBA feather banner. Should be a good time. Lots of good food. Lots of good people.
Skywatch that night.
And Skywatch is that night. But separated in time. You'll have an opportunity to go walk off your hot dogs and hamburgers and then go back out for Skywatch over at Northwest River Park. We're putting the parks to the test that day. Good question. Other observing reports? Okay. Moving on to old business. First item is the club website. Sean, you have any updates on that?
Officers need to talk to their email.
Okay.
Download their email.
So if you have at backbayastro.org website email address, and here I'm looking at the club officers as well as a few emeritus officers that may have a George at or some such. Okay. Fair enough. Please copy your email. Sean's going to be executing the migration. We found a website provider that costs us $0 because we're a 501c3 nonprofit,
that's nice.
Which is much preferable to the $1,000-plus contract that we would have stayed with if we'd gone with our previous provider. Yep. So thank you, Sean and Rich, for getting all the details on that ironed out.
What we have to do?
So
the only stipulation is we have to fix it at the bottom of our web page for using that.
Which I think
a little bored about the very bottom.
Powered by or some such.
It sounds like a very pretty thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Need a motion?
I don't think we need a motion for that. Unless someone objects to it and wants us to pursue a different option, then we can.
Unless someone wants to spend $1,000.
Rather, there's a lot of better. Yeah. Free is a great price. Okay, next item on old business is there's a potluck and tie-dye. We talked about that briefly, but as Rich mentioned, we spent some money on some t-shirts. A lot of people that are here right now joined us. We did some solar astronomy and had some food and made some tie-dye t-shirts. It was a really far out time. We made more shirts than we required from people that are there, so we are planning on selling those at some of our upcoming events. Boardwalk Astronomy, Pride in the Peak, to see if we can raise some money so that we can spend it elsewhere. It's a lot of fun. My hands and probably Sean's are still not natural colors due to, rinsing out made it worse. Okay, that is that. We had a discussion last month for a door prize fund that was tabled. Jeff, did you have a chance to get with Rich to talk about the, nope, okay.
Sorry.
So unless there's an objection, we'll leave that tabled to a following time when we have the information. Do you have the next item is we decided to go ahead and do the handouts for the night sky. Do you have a report on how that went? Okay. I'll
turn over the podium to you. So.
Okay. Wish I could show this to everybody. At the top,
on that
trip. It says, printed by Back Bay Amateur Astronomers, BBAA, in Virginia, with our website. And it's an HTTP, so I can change it later. But it's not an HTTPS yet, right? Am I right? Not yet. Okay. Anyway, front and back, it was 18 cents a copy. Yeah, 18 cents a copy, and I made 100 copies. So I spent $18 of the club's money, and we got 100 copies for this month. I think that should be enough. If it's not, I can get some more. By the end of the month, I'll know if I need a few more for Boardwalk Astronomy. So anyway, this way everybody gets a
take a look through our telescope, how fast it's around. I know you know what it looks like, but not only does it have the image of the night sky, it also has about the celestial objects and that's going to happen. That way the public gets to have a piece of what they saw in our summer vacation. They can remember Back Bay Amateur Astronomers. And this does say, by the way, it's not from Night Sky Network. It is from, I don't know, it's from Sky Maps. It's from Sky Maps. And it says copyright, blah, 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 not for commercial use, but educational groups may freely redistribute printed handouts. I can almost read this in 8-point type. Mm-hmm. And full details, blah, blah, blah. So we have permission to print it out. And we're not going to sell it. We're going to give it away.
Yeah.
So I think for 18 cents is pretty good. I'm going to see if I can find a better price than
we haven't given those out yet. This
no, I got the whole 100. This is number 100 here.
Okay.
I can print color if you want.
Come by the office.
Oh, I can save some money with Mr. Ben.
We'll get some maybe thicker cardstock too.
You want to put it in thicker stuff? All right.
Any color you want.
I got the color.
If you think it'll help the impact.
That's a great idea. Thank you. I'm so glad you came by. Thank you very much. All right. Great.
I say.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
All right. I hate to say we have a lot of items on new business, but we do. But I'll try and get through them quickly so we can get to Sandy's presentation here in a little bit, and I'll try and get to mine. A couple of items I got recently, I was contacted by a company called Dwarf Lab. They're a Chinese company that manufactures smart telescopes. They asked what we do as a club, what our aims are, some of our operations and what.
No way.
And they sent us one. They said, hey, why don't you check and see how this sort of thing would support your mission? So they sent us one to play with. My intention is for us to play with it and then have various people of various experience levels. I consider myself a rank beginner for smart telescopes. Jeff is an absolute expert. And then there are probably some people who've never touched one that can that would be able to give us some good feedback on what it is. They also gave us a promo code. If people are interested in one, you can get a discount on them as well, which is nice. I'll push that out in the next update. But expect to see this at outreach events and expect to see it passed around from club member so that we can get an assessment on this and see how it might support our mission or missions. When I was talking to them, I came up with a couple of different use cases, and this is something I'd like you all to think about as we're evaluating it, are obviously the amateur astronomer. There's the potential use case of doing things at outreach because you can bring it up on your smartphone just like you can with a C-Star. There is the library telescope, and then there's the donation to academic organizations like community colleges or high schools, middle schools, so that the professor or teacher can work with their class and actually plan on putting together a observing schedule over the course of like a team of 10 kids, figure out what they want to observe on over the course of the night, slice the night sky pie of time up between them so they can take those exposures for however long, just like they would on a research telescope. Think about that. Any feedback on that, and we can get that back to them. If we can give them some good feedback, there is also another object that they have out there, the Dwarf 3 telescope, that they mentioned that they might be willing to send one of those to us to evaluate as well, so that we can put that through its paces. I got some questions on the floor. George.
They say what price is?
This one is $399, natively. I can't remember if it's a 5% or 10% discount. They gave us the option of making it a normal price, but the club gets the 5% or 10%, or we just give a straight discount to our members. I suggested the latter, but maybe we could potentially, if we like this and we want to give it as an option to people out in the public, maybe we can get an offer, an alternate promo code that we can, you know, hang on our social media that could help benefit our scholarship community or library telescope programs and such. Yeah.
Did it come with the magnetic snap-on solar code?
I don't think so. I saw something about that. I was actually going to try and test that. This arrived literally yesterday. Sean and I were talking about it while we were making T-shirts. But
I want to reach out back to you before contact because it's supposed
to. Is it? Okay. I'll take a look through the box again. Maybe I opened it up, charged it, took it outside, took an image of the Pinwheel Galaxy that was okay, and I'm happy to show people after. The battery life on it wasn't that great, and I also didn't know exactly what I was doing because, of course, I went immediately to just try it instead of reading the manual and realized after it had been tracking for about an hour and a half that you're supposed to push the button for it to start capturing images. Womp womp. Anyway, but I did figure that out, and for only getting about a third of the images stacked that it wanted, the denoising and such was pretty good. So happy to share the picture. I would like to throw it up there, but I forgot to actually download that email. So here we are. Small. I will get back to you on that one. I think it's comparable to the S30. Yeah. I don't know that it's exactly. It probably is. I could try and open it up a little bit later. Maybe we can even give it a try after the meeting. We'll throw it outside and see what happens. Okay. So that's the thing that's going on. Dwarf Labs are working with us to see what we can do together. Rich, you wanted to discuss the Zoom account. Rich might also be working. Rich probably stepped away. I'll table that one for now. Next item that we need to discuss, I mentioned the picnic, which is on the 18th of July. Excellent. So the wrong stuff I put out there has been overcome by right. Good. Normally we give away door prizes. I would like to continue that tradition. I would like to ask the club to authorize some funds. One, generally we just buy the food, but it seems reasonable if the club would be willing to entertain a motion to buy the food for the picnic as well, or the meat stuff. Normally it is a potluck, except the burgers and dogs are paid for by the club. Everything else is brought by us to support. But if people would be willing to approve me going out and buying the meat for the picnic, as well as some amount of money for door prizes. Sean, what have we done in the past?
Oh, a couple hundred or more.
Yeah. I think 200 or 300.
Yeah. But it has been a while since I bought it. It might be more.
It's been a year.
Well, where are you going?
Yeah,
Brian's
going.
For the prizes. Food or for the prizes?
The prizes. I know where you're going for the food.
Yeah.
I know where you don't want to go.
I'm going to find some good prizes, but I'd like to I would request to have an authorized amount of budget, maybe $300 to buy door prizes with. Does that seem reasonable to the club?
Our motion for the club to buy the meat and along with $300 for door prizes. Second.
All right. Any discussion?
Already did.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. We have a budget. $300 plus me. Thank you. All right. Next item is I'm going to go to Ben to discuss the eyepiece camera. Do you want to come up?
Can you pull it up? Smart Eye, Pegasus Astro. Technology is just absolutely screaming. You see the Smart Scope. That was pretty cool that they gave us a donation. But they have an eyepiece out there by Pegasus Astro. It's called Smart Eye. There it is. It's pricey. But what they've done is an all-in-one camera, stacking processor,
see if I can shoot.
Two-stage thermal intercooling in an eyepiece. Mm-hmm. So basically, you get to see galaxies and nebulas and everything else in full color, live, as you're staring through the eyepiece. Just unbelievable technology.
So it's not a camera.
It's a camera. It's an eyepiece camera. So the camera's got obviously a sensor, and then it projects it into the eyepiece. So you're looking through the eyepiece, and you're seeing like a little miniature type TV in there. So I thought for outreach, because obviously there's limitations on what you can see optical. that it would just
move it, mess it up.
Yeah.
I want to see it. I'm not tall.
That's true. That's true.
Okay, I can see
that's true. It does have Wi-Fi and it does have Bluetooth. So it's kind of like that, but an eyepiece that would go on a larger telescope, let's say, or something like that. So I'm just putting it out there. There's all sorts of options out there. I'm trying to think about something to enhance the viewing experience. Visual's fine, but this will take you to where you just can't go.
Anybody got one yet?
No.
There was something like that years ago. It might be the same company. It was years ago. It was electronic. It was an eyepiece, just kind of like that.
Years
that
ago, they had magnifiers. They had magnifiers. I'm not sure they had something like this.
It was electronic. It wasn't just...
Yeah, it was electronic, yeah. They had photo multipliers. I mean,
right.
That was the old technology.
Right.
It was basically like a special operation.
Yeah.
They used it. Enhancing, you know, the dark.
Right.
Darkness.
It didn't stack.
Yeah, it didn't stack.
Right.
But in any case,
sounds great.
The big kicker on the stacking is that it would require a tracking telescope, which we have sometimes at outreach events, but not always. Dave, get a hand up.
If it's cloudy, could you see something?
We stripped from being astronomers to being meteorologists.
Scourge of weather astronomers. In any case, just put it out there. I'd be interested in subsidize that some, but I didn't know if it's practical. Another negative aspect, it does weigh 1.75 pounds.
Wow.
So it has to go on a decent scale. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not quite a German name.
It's a three.
Two inch eyepiece.
Okay. So it's a 2-inch eyepiece.
It would fit on the club's 11 inch.
That's true. That's track.
Yeah.
And we have a nice solar telescope. Yeah, just use it outreach and stuff like that. And that would take the observing to.
I don't think the PST will hold a 2-inch.
And I'm just saying, in terms of money we invested in to do outreach with gear and equipment, that is just a tool that's out there that takes observing to kind of a different level.
Have you seen examples of someone using it on a PST?
Or there's videos somewhere. On it. There's videos on it. YouTube. There's all sorts of stuff.
I'm curious if they were going to look like that.
Okay.
It's kind of like the first electronic telescope that came out with. It was like $4,000. Remember a couple of guys showed up. What was it?
I think it was the Unistar.
Yeah, the Unistar. It's like that, except the usual telescope. You just pick it up.
That same sensor is in the camera I just purchased, which is a regular CWO camera. From like an astro and it's blown me away that they put all that a little
cool too. Cool down to 20.
-30.
Okay.
USB-C and go. Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. Very impressive. Any case.
Something we want to look into, maybe send some information out to the groups IO to discuss.
Sure.
And then follow up.
Okay.
All right. Any other discussion on the eyepiece for the time being? Okay. All right. That is actually Rich. Are you back with us?
I got one.
Go ahead.
Astron.
Okay.
You mentioned it last time.
Okay.
Well, I'll wait for Rich.
Randy Regan, which is also a BBA member, is a rocket guy, and he's got a contact in NASA that knows one of the astronauts that's going to the moon in Artemis, and that is Andre Douglas. So I sent Andre Douglas a 200 character message, which was very brief what we want to do, and NASA's got a lot of red tape to get him to come to us. And Jeff Edmondson's all ready to interview him and all that stuff. Sandy, maybe you too. I didn't think you. But we're just running into a snag because NASA wants $1,500 for, you know, travel fees and all kinds of crazy stuff. So I reached out to the principal of, by the way, the principal of Western Branch High School. He's a graduate. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a big Tidewater event. And you think that, you know, so I wrote the principal today. I said, in lieu of all this stuff that's going on, we must have had about 10 messages floating between the NASA and us. And lately, I asked, can we get you guys to subsidize most of it? And we can do a little bit, like in the hundreds, but you can do the thousands part. Basically, is what I said. And I sent it to you, and I sent it to Randy. And I sent that one message just to see if the principal would go for it, maybe the principal of Chesapeake City Public Schools. So if he's reached out to his higher-ups in Chesapeake Public Schools, maybe they'd go for it too, and it wouldn't cost us anything. So I'm hoping it's not going to cost anything for the whole thing. Anyway, the ball is rolling, and probably they want a two-week window, and then they can extend the two-week window. It's a crazy system that they have. However, we're in the running, and the worst case is we can do a Zoom. You know, at least we get to see the astronaut, you know, Zoom and all that stuff. So that's the progress report on the astronaut, Andre Douglas.
Is there a time frame that we're targeting?
I was trying to get it to come to graduation. I was really getting hope because that's like the 15th of this month. Yeah. But now it's August, September. Yeah, I sent one to George too. Okay. Now the time frame is August, September, because when he gets closer and closer to that, you know, blast off date, he's not going to have any time for anything. Right now, Randy says he's not doing anything. He's not training. He's not doing anything. So why can't he come soon? They get a lot of requests, and that's the deal. That's my report.
Thank you.
Rich, back with us? Okay. Just in case he gets tied up, I'll go ahead and give the quick summary, which is that historically speaking, the fact that we are on Zoom right now is out of the goodness of Rich's heart. He got the Zoom account for us for our use many moons ago. It is up for renewal. He would like to, they're also apparently raising their rates at Zoom, and he would prefer to not do that out of pocket, especially considering the heartache and hassle that we ran into last month and a few other times when he's been unavailable having to start the meeting. The question is on the floor as to what should we do going forward. A few options include us as the club getting the Zoom subscription, which I think is $170 a year. Another option would be for us to use something like Google Meet, which is free but limited to an hour, and then we would drop in about 20 minutes, which may not be ideal. Another option that is entirely free to us is for us to use Discord, which we have a Discord server as a club and have, when fits and starts, tried to use it in the past, not necessarily for streaming the club meeting, but that is something that we could try and do going forward. I don't know what, I know there are a few of us that were on the discussion line without me checking my phone.
It was an hour, I think.
But that was for Google Meet.
Okay.
There's no time limit for Discord. But what's the 25 for Discord, 25. Unlimited for Google, unlimited for Zoom. What is the time frame that we need to make a decision by? Does anyone recall?
July.
By July.
Let me look at Jitsi. It's an online meeting place like this, and it's free. And
okay.
I don't think there's limits on time limit or amount of people joining.
Okay. I guess worst case is that if without further action, we are going to be either in person only or streaming through one of those other alternate options for our August meeting, because we don't generally broadcast the July meeting because we're at the picnic. When Rich comes back, he may have
a motion to approve the Zoom or in lieu of potentially checking with Sean's talking about?
Well, so if there are other, I'm all about, as a 501c3 with a relatively small budget, I encourage us to use free options where we can, especially where they work. And frankly, I think there's a lot of options, possibilities for us with collaboration with events, especially talking about needing to find a ride. Or I know that, you know, we have Corn Watch every week, and there's sometimes, hey, who's going out there? That's a place where something like Discord could allow us to collaborate everybody together. Right, and it would, that way we'd have, yes, more things in one spot instead of yet other services.
Why not just temporarily, since the thing is expiring in July anyways, temporarily use the Discord for like a month or two. That way you can explore more options.
I like that option. because that way we can try it, and if it doesn't work, then we find something else out. In the worst case, we have 1 month where we don't have
anything. I move that we work to get the August meeting on Discord, to see how well that works.
I don't know that it requires a motion, but that definitely closes down the discussion and gets to Sandy's topic. We have a motion.
I just wanted to say that I have a lot of experience in the Discord, and I'm actually the one that made it.
Okay.
Yeah. If we need help with that, I can do that.
And Gabe did also volunteer.
I also am part of a lot of big Discord. I know a lot of people who know a lot about.
All right. So we're gonna have the under 30s help drag us kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
I turned 31 this year.
Oh, well, you don't look a day over 23. Okay. So the under 35s are gonna drag us kicking and screaming into the 21st century. All right. We have a motion that is about to die for want of a second.
Second.
And the second. All right, that means George is going to have to get a Discord account because he seconded the motion.
Oh,
any discussion?
Verify accounts.
I will help you.
All right. No discussion. All in favor of using trialing Discord for our next club meeting?
All right.
Opposed?
A question.
Yep. I already had the opportunity for discussion.
Just entered my mind.
All right.
Someone that sees it on the website or hears about it and can't make a meeting, new person.
Yeah.
Do they have to create a Discord account to be able to do it, or is it like Zoom, they just get a link and go?
Yes, you do have to. You don't have to be on our Discord server to do it, but I think you do have to have a Discord account.
I like that idea. That's because some people are, you know, creating accounts, security issues, another app on the phone.
I would not
go there.
Kind of part of the point of having.
Well, I'm just saying, if in fact you have to create an account, you're already limiting X percentage of the population of people that want to come in and watch it, you know, get a link and watch it, whether it be Microsoft Teams or...
We should also be able to go ahead and still record our meeting and post it like we have been doing. Historically speaking, the number of times that we've been joined on Zoom by someone...
That's what I'm saying. Is how many visitors who are not members have been joining the meeting? Like, we'll still post it on YouTube. Afterwards, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But how many people who aren't club members are joining the meeting? It's not that many.
That's a fair point. Feedback from the outstations.
Yeah, that's
people. But there is something called Jitsi, and it's just like Zoom. If you don't need an account, you just put in the link and open it. Like, so Discord doesn't work because of that.
Having yet one more account is not intriguing. Even for the people that are regulars, you know.
I know what you're saying.
So
do you get rid of your Facebook?
I would push the other direction that we may have more participation from the millennial types. Having it be on Discord, they're already logging.
And if I may, like, Discord isn't just useful for like Zoom projects, for like eating and stuff. Like, there's a lot of people like I was talking to. I mentioned this in the officer's chat, but like there are spots where like you can literally have a channel dedicated for specific people, and specific people, only specific people can access, and not for people around the space. You can have stuff where the families like any old business they can post it on there, and it can reach us. And it helps us condense everything. So even if you don't use it for Zoom for meetings and stuff, or people online, there is still a lot of merit to using that because it helps condense everything and helps spread everything. It's like a bunch of different apps and a bunch of different conversations where people have to like keep track of in order to like get the beats and what's going on.
There was a lot of discussion at the last East Coast Star Party that we were going to try. It would be great if we'd actually had some good usage of the Discord server because then we could push out schedule updates and such things that way. Not to try and push too hard to end this particular topic, we were in the middle of voting on whether to trial it for a month. There is a valid concern. I would recommend that we consider that's the reason that we trial things for a month. And if it's like, hey, I'm not comfortable doing this because the information it's asking for, I don't want to start an account. That's something that we can discuss at that August meeting, or I guess September. How'd it go? What do we think is an after action? And maybe for the September meeting, we try Jitsi or some other thing. Gabe, you're reaching for the sky. Either you're being held up or you have a question.
No, I'm just saying, we just take a look, and apparently there is a way to invite people to the Discord meeting without them having to get an
account. Okay.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know how complicated it is, but like, this is also Google AI, so it could be wrong. But at least there is a way to do it.
All right.
So basically, we can look into it.
Yeah, so let's look into it, and we can
get you guys to do that.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and restart the voting since there were some great questions that came up in discussion after the time for discussion had closed. So all in favor of trialing it?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Anyone out in Zoom land want to make a really strong argument one way or the other?
Thumbs up,
no shaking heads. Okay. Motion passes. We'll have the next meeting on Zoom. Instructions on how to do that are forthcoming. Sorry. Next meeting is going to be at the picnic, which will not be distributed broadcast. Good Lord. And I'm going to be presenting a topic here. And then the August meeting we'll do on Discord. Okay. Fantastic.
Make sure that you send an email out and make sure everyone knows.
Yes.
That's the
option. Yeah, absolutely. And we'll try and drum up support for Discord in the interim time so that people will have accounts and we can test it out and such. Okay. That is all I have for new business, unless there's something else from the floor. Okay. In that case, I'm going to welcome Sandy to the podium to discuss the Library Telescope Program.
I'll see if I can get my words together.
Hi, I'm Sandy Paxson, for those of you that don't know me, and I'm kind of talking on behalf of the Library Telescope Committee. Okay.
Zoom land
camera. Okay. So the Library Telescope Committee we're really excited about our initiative because I think it'll make a tremendous impact in the community. To give you a big picture, our long-term vision is to place a library telescope in every library across Hampton Roads, which is a pretty tall order, but we think we can do it. So to give you a little bit of a background, the Library Telescope Program started in 2008 with the New Hampshire Astronomical Society. The premise is very simple. They wanted to make sure someone could go to a library, check out a telescope, just like you could check out a book. And it allowed residents, whether you didn't have the income or the age or the location, you could check out a library telescope and observe the stars just like we can. It also kind of tamped down the intimidation that some people have joining a group or diving into a astronomy like that. So, last month, Irene brought in the library telescope that she purchased from High Point Scientific. That is what we're looking at. It's a 4.5-inch tabletop Dob. And they're very durable, very user-friendly. You can be a newbie and learn how to use it very easily. And most all of the components are attached to the telescope, so a librarian doesn't have to worry about trying to keep up with small parts, and that is very attractive to them. So how do we launch that in our market? I think that our group has really two roles. First of all, the first role is we have to be able to reach out and find businesses, organizations, that might be interested in participating and donating money so that we can buy the telescopes and then place them in the libraries. I kind of stuck my toe in a little bit last week, and I think it might be a little bit more challenging than I had anticipated, but I think because we have businesses are a little bit more cautious because of the economic environment, and there's a lot of competition for nonprofit donations right now. So I think we have to cast a wide net and try to reach just the right businesses, organizations that might assist us. The High Point library telescopes that we're looking at are about $365-$375 a piece, I believe.
Sounds right.
Yeah. Okay. And we're thinking about asking about $475 or $500 because we would like to have a little bit of a slush fund to create a booklet to put inside the pouch that is attached to it. And also a little bit of money if we need to make repairs, replace batteries, if there's damage to the telescope.
Thanks. We actually, the committee got together and we tested one out.
Yeah, and it actually has great views, especially the moon and some of the planets.
Those of you who were here last month saw one in person.
Right.
So.
Yeah. It's very similar to the
So what we really need to start out is if anyone knows of an organization or a business that you think might be interested in participating, please let us know. If you know someone within the organization that you'd like us to reach out to, or you'd like to reach out to, that would be awesome, because I think we just need to get, we need to get it rolling, and hopefully we'll snowball after that. So that's our first step, getting the funds to buy the telescopes put in the libraries. And then the second role we're going to ask is so that members can possibly be a point person for each library. So, for example, if we put a telescope in Norfolk Library XYZ, we'd like a member to volunteer to be that point person for that specific library. They can go and meet the contact person at the library, provide basic information, some training. And then if there's any problems, that contact person knows who to reach out to. If there's any damage, if they have any, they need special parts. And then that our member can also check in with the library every quarter just to make sure that the telescope's in good working order and they don't need, we don't need any maintenance on it. So
good opportunity to partner with your local library, the libraries.
Yeah. Keep on. Yeah. Yes. We will. And it's really basic. So the point of the library telescope program is so that the librarian really doesn't have to do anything. The librarian really does not need to be very knowledgeable. On each library telescope, we will be putting a QR code. Let me back up on that. Every sponsor will also have their logo on this, on the scopes that they sponsor. We'll have the Back Bay Astronomy, Amateur Astronomy logo, as well as a URL code to go to our website. And that donor will also have their logo there, as well as a link to their website. So we want to make sure we give them some brand awareness as well. So the goal is for there to be a QR code. There is a QR code on the library telescope that takes the user to a step-by-step of how to use it. So you really don't have much to train. There's no training really involved. It's just basic information. And then
it should be something they can download before they loan
it. There'll be a book in the bag that we print out for. That's part of the kit.
Yeah.
So number of libraries in Virginia Beach, do we have a number?
I don't have a number. I've reached out to five libraries. I have a contact at five libraries right now: Virginia Beach, Norfolk, Chesapeake, Hampton, and Newport News. And those contacts reached out to all their libraries, and they would like, they're asking between 23 and 29 scopes to put in their libraries.
But some libraries are one, some are two. I think that one library was like
29 for Hampton Roads.
No, it's 60. Just, no, I mean, I'm sorry. Those five cities have requested between a total of 23 and 29 scopes total over those five cities.
About 5%, 5 or 6%.
Yeah, I mean, Chesapeake requested 10. Virginia Beach only needs four. I mean, so gotcha. It totaled up.
The other question is, historically, the club did donate similar telescopes that were kind of locked down. We have the history of, are they around? They broke down?
I know I gave one to produce. What happened?
Great.
I haven't followed up.
That's a great question. So we actually had two of those library telescopes at that session that we tested out, the one that Irene bought. Jeff Thornton went and checked. One he checked out and one he checked on, and they said, actually, it's broken. Can you guys fix it? So we brought both of them. We fixed it by unbreaking the red dot finder that they put some weird device into. But they're still working fine. Now, that's these, which were the Orion Starblast style tabletop dot. There was also, speaking of alternatives, most of the libraries in the region have some sort of library of things.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Chesapeake Public Libraries, all the telescopes they have, I think right now they have two among their seven or eight branches that have one. Their $30 Bird Jones terrible plastic refractors off of Amazon.
Yeah.
Hobby killers, things that when I go into Goodwill and I see one, I buy it and throw it away in public service. We don't want those in circulation.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we're trying to do here is to get good scopes that will inspire people into the hands of people who wouldn't necessarily.
So some of the ones that we donated are in circulation.
They are still in
circulation. They're all good. We have three we donated.
Three. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
There are two at Central Library, right? Yeah, there's two there and then one is in Fort Hicks.
And there are, I think there are at least six libraries in Virginia Beach, five plus Central.
They say they only need four. Two or four. I have it all written down.
Are these scopes getting used pretty frequently? They keep track of
it.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
When they work.
That's why Jeffrey Thornton had to check it out because he could not go get it.
Yeah.
He had to put his name on the list.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good.
When I did a search, I was just checking this. I asked. I did a poll. Like, how many libraries do we have in the greater or the central Hampton Roads region? And it's like on the order of 44. Libraries, individual libraries. Now, some of them are going to want more than one. And eventually, it would be great to expand further out than that to catch, you know, the Isle of Wight, Surrey, even Northeast North Carolina, because we're still their nexus point.
I can't understand why Virginia said they only need four scopes because they get seven libraries. I forgot about Princeton. Princeton, Blackwater, Great Neck, Oceanfront, Windsor Woods, Bayside, and Central.
Maybe they're trying to be modest.
Maybe.
They
only have two.
Well, because they have three minus seven,
it's
four,
right? Well, they have two at Virginia Beach, and there's one in the
portion. Yeah, question.
Yes.
Okay. Have you been able to reach out to other groups in the United States, including library telescopes?
Yes. I actually had an hour conversation with the New Hampshire group.
I assume they found what not to do and what to do.
They do. There's a lot of information, almost too much information.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there is a Zoom that we can jump on monthly that with the Library Telescope National Group, we want to do that. So if anyone has any recommendations on places we should reach out to, let me know. Or grants. Grants are another. It's just grants take longer.
Yeah.
That's all.
So as a club, are we looking to move towards donating another newer batch like we did years ago?
So right now the I don't think the Library Telescope Committee is right now asking for funds directly from the club to do this.
Oh, no. We're actually.
We are going to apply for the Library Telescope. The program is the national one.
Okay.
Because that's how we've gotten them in the past. We applied for it and we were the regional winner, so they gave us one and we placed it in the local library.
Okay.
So we'll try and do that again this year. In fact, the application is due at the end of the month. I get an action item. I think that's the case. Now, as the committee finalizes the dollar value, one thing that we might do in order to make it more palatable, especially with the issue that Sandy came up with, and I'm putting words in her mouth, but maybe we do reduce the price point that we ask for the donation, and then the maintenance comes out of Club High.
Maybe so. I mean, I think we're just, like I said, we're going to test the water. I've also reached out to the Friends of the Library at each one of those cities. I have not heard back from them yet. Okay. I think we just need to get on the phone and find the right person in the right organizations first, and then we'll have. I don't know whether 350 is going to be a big difference from 475. Maybe we'll just have to.
What's 475?
47. So we're trying to figure out what's the life cycle cost that we need to ask for. What do we want a company to put forward so we can slap their sticker on there that will incorporate all the costs associated with the telescope.
Gotcha.
Because it's not just buying the scope, it's also maintaining the scope, making the printouts and some such. The website is free, but putting the placard on there, we want to make sure that we don't put ourselves into a position where the club is inadvertently putting more of the bill than we were expecting.
There are often the red dot finder, the battery for that, people don't turn it off. And so we have to replace the batteries often.
I mean, I have to replace the batteries on mine. Yeah. I don't have mine off.
So the one we had to repair, they wired it to AA batteries, and they kind of broke the red dot finder to keep the holes put out of the original battery. So you're going to need to get the red dot finder out for that dumpster at that point. So things like that.
Just little nickel and dime things that.
I think last month we also discussed having cases.
So
it is recommended we not have cases.
That was a feedback from the.
Yeah, that was from the national committee. Basically, they said that if someone needs to put it in a case, it is more likely to be broken because they put it in the case incorrectly, or they try to jam it in the case, or then they feel that if it's in a case, they don't need to be as careful with it. Mm-hmm. So they actually have a placard that shows you how to put it in your car and put your seatbelt on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So the reason I asked Sandy to come talk about this, especially after we talked about it last month, was basically to announce, hey, we're kicking this off.
Right.
We're going to be looking for any volunteers, especially as library ambassadors, as well as anyone who wants to help with fundraising. So far, we've dragooned a number of people onto the committee, some by their consent, others by the fact that they showed up at the meeting at the wrong time. So they got pulled in. If anyone is actually interested in joining
everyone
us,
is welcome.
We're happy to have you
great.
On board.
Great.
And I would expect there's going to be a time where we pull the Library Telescope Committee over to play with this to evaluate if something like this has a potential role in another phase.
Yeah.
I have a thought. Because the city of Virginia Beach subsidizes us in a way for operations for the stuff we do on Boardwalk. Granted, we do allocate that funds towards a scholarship. I think as a club, it would be a good thing to give back to the libraries through us donating a number of 4 or 5 scopes from our club, because it's circular money, really is. Money goes to scholarship, we have cash available, and you're looking at, $1,500? At least Virginia Beach gets taken care of by BBAA, because BBAA, Virginia Beach, takes care of us.
Well, technically, Virginia Beach does it, but the company they hire to manage Boardwalk.
It's under contract. They're under contract.
So Virginia Beach also handles the libraries that we were doing. Does the member also draw on with that?
That's a great point, and it is definitely possible that at a future Library Telescope Committee update, Sandy might bring to the club. We might buy a few for various purposes, especially if there's an underserved area in Hampton Roads. Because I would presume one of the things that we'd like to offer is that if you donate a telescope, you get some say in where it goes. Mm-hmm. And we might find that it's easy to place a telescope in Virginia Beach and in portions of Norfolk, but maybe portions of Portsmouth or Suffolk don't have people that are as interested in placing one. And that's where we, as the group that's dedicated to bringing global astronomy to the people of Hampton Roads, might step in.
And it's marketing for us as well.
Well,
you can have literature, hey, come to our web meeting, come to our Zoom meeting, whatever the case might be.
Our logo is going to be on every telescope.
Yeah. But information about the club, too, because it's marketing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, we're going to have a QR code that goes to our link.
And don't use during daylight.
Yeah, we'll have
just don't give us a filter,
which is such a great segue to our next topic.
Please don't
do you have anything else?
Sandy,
thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Sandy.
I really do appreciate the fact that Sandy jumped up and took on running this program, especially since it's a new thing for us. I do encourage anyone who wants to be part of it to join in the fun, because it is fun to be part of just planning it and executing it and our little testing sessions.
And just so people know, they are our astronomy scholarship recipient, because she's getting awards from the City of Virginia Beach school system tonight. She's at an award ceremony tonight. It's not going to be able to make it, and she would like to come out to our picnic. So
That's awesome. Okay. But Ben brought up a good point. You don't want to point the telescope at the sun. So let's talk a little bit about the sun. You look, you point at the telescope. Well, I mean,
the old welder glasses.
A lot of us point telescopes. Oh, we got
a young lad.
I'm sorry. We got a.
Hello.
Oh, there we go.
Sorry for joining the meeting late. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Very good. Sorry for joining late, but Norfolk's telescopes, library telescopes, are back in circulation. I took them there last week. They were very appreciative, gave us a nice card for repairing our telescopes. And as of last week, they were all in good shape. I don't know if they've been checked out or what's going on, but they're back in operation.
What about the 3D print thing?
Question was the 3D printed pieces, because one of the components on one of the telescopes had broken. I think we discovered, what did we do? There was an issue with it. I can't remember what the issue was.
The issue was that Norfolk Libraries wanted people to connect their cell phones to the eyepiece. So that put a whole lot of stress on the eyepiece component. And what was happening was the piece was cracking and making the telescope unusable, because it was breaking the eyepiece off. So what we did with that one telescope was to 3D print a replacement part that would strengthen that area. And I've encouraged them not to go through putting the cell phone up to the eyepiece to try to take a photo, because it stresses the telescope too much.
But the question, the 3D printed repair part, that worked?
Yes, it worked. It's back in operation.
You got two more.
All right. Jeff's saying that he's got two more in case we need to rotate those in.
Well, we'll put them in the stockpile there for when the telescopes come in to be repaired again.
Excellent. Maybe we'll also have you 3D print a new housing for a red dot finder.
Okay.
There was also, came in during the discussion, Mark Wilson posted that he's had some experience with the Dwarf Mini since February and has taken, for example, this image of the North American Nebula last night using the built-in dual band filter. So,
nice.
Yeah, I had much less luck than that, so I'll have to... But yeah, that is
that.
Now, one thing that I would like to try, because I know Jeff is probably the guy to do this discussion, to check this out, would be to do a side-by-side comparison of all the different types of smart telescopes. And then maybe we'll come back to the group with a discussion of what works out there. Maybe we can even get Bruce to take the same images with his Origin to astrograph. So thank you, Mark, for volunteering that image out there. That is gorgeous. Far better than what I came up with. All right. Got about 20 minutes left. I'm going to try and cover my topic so that we don't end up laying it again, since we are now into, we're really into summer and there's a lot of solar observing going on because the days are long and the nights are late. So I'm going to go ahead and share this screen. So, folks, I want to start out with the fact that this is a expanded version of the Our Dynamic Sun presentation that was given to us by the Night Sky Network. It was one of their outreach toolkits. This is available on the Night Sky Network toolkit page. You can download the original presentation, which is a few fewer slides. The purpose of this talk tonight is to make sure that you are aware of those tools that are available to you. And as we are amateur astronomers, we probably want to know a little bit more.
So I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on some aspects of the sun, possibly so you have a few pieces of information you can keep in your pocket. So when you're out there Saturday, Sunday, and Kent and I are rattling off information about what a plage is versus an active region and how it goes and it is involved, some people are a little less inclined to throw out that same bit of information. This is good leveling, and here's some stuff you can learn about the sun. Now, the great thing is, if you think solar astronomy, is, or solar physics, as it is called in the biz, is a bit niche, right? Well, all stars are suns somewhere, although there is a lot of variability between those stars. Now, I was hoping that Rich was listening to that, because variable stars are obviously his jam, mm-hmm. and our sun is not terribly variable as stars go. And I went trying to dig into why that is, and the answer is helium, and the answer as to why that is we don't know. So, and that's actually going to be a common answer that comes up, despite the fact that we've been living underneath this beautiful thing for, depending on, you know, who you listen to, either hundreds or millions or billions of years, there's a lot of stuff we don't know about it, but it's still pretty cool. So what do we know going into this is that the sun is a massive incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace. Wait, sorry, wrong song. Okay, so the first question that we would like to ask when we're out in public talking to people is, what do we think about when we think of the sun? Yeah, obviously, we all know a lot about what the sun is and what it isn't. The fact that they might be giants actually got it wrong. The sun is not, in fact, a gigantic massive incandescent gas. It's actually a ball of semi-fluid plasma, and it's driven by gravity. Why is the sun hot? Why does the sun glow? These are questions that the public doesn't necessarily realize the answer to. Now, I know that Dennis goes over this at the Air and Space Museum ad nauseum all the time, I'm sure. Hopefully correcting
people. We don't talk about the sun. We're talking about Apollo 12.
Oh, okay.
Which is the main centerpiece there.
So I'm really restricting my urge, because I know you have the display right there, and I really want to go stand over and point. But seriously, for the group, why does the sun glow?
The black body radiation.
Yeah, exactly. The sun glows because it's hot. Why is the sun hot?
It's essentially a gigantic, fusion
reactor. Oh, you skipped a step. 5 points off. So you're not wrong, fundamentally. But the reason the sun is hot is because of friction. So the sun is made up of a lot of particles, right? All the stuff that we can see is not anything to do with a nuclear reaction. What's happening is the sun is, in fact, exploding away, but that's irrelevant because that isn't the energy that's reaching us directly. What's happening is, as it's exploding away, it's contracting back down. And as it contracts, parts of it are rubbing on one another. If you just do this simple experiment, rubbing your hands together, you're going to feel some heat building up. And what happens when something gets hot? It glows. When it glows, it gives off energy. Loses some of that, and it starts to flow back out. So there's a convectional aspect. And keep that in mind, because it's going to come back up in a little bit. Now, the question that Gabe was really asking was the next question. Okay, smart aleck. If the sun's glowing because it's hot, and it's hot because of gravity pulling things down, rubbing on each other through friction, why does it keep happening? And the answer is nuclear reactions. Those nuclear reactions that are happening in the center are causing an outpouring, a welling of heat that is going to travel through its various convective layers and sometimes travel along magnetic field lines so that it can disperse that energy and cause it to push back out so it can collapse down on itself. Now, if the sun were smaller, say, the size of Jupiter, would it still glow? Yes. Jupiter, in fact, glows quite brightly in certain temperature bands through the black body radiation curves. So it's not super bright, but it's bright. Jupiter's moons actually receive more energy from Jupiter than they do from the sun, which is kind of cool. The problem is Jupiter is collapsing on itself, and it does not have those nuclear reactions in its center, so it will eventually go dim. So will the sun, but not for a while, and it's going to go through some pretty dramatic changes in the meantime. So those are the things I want you to think about as we're talking to the public, because why does the sun glow? It's on fire. Oh, no, it's not on fire. It's because of nuclear reactions, kind of. And then we can talk about some of the details. Now, the devil is in the details,
but they say so is salvation. And we're going to talk about where the devil is. And unfortunately, sometimes the answer is we don't know. So as I was talking about, unlike Jupiter, a star has a lot of the sun has a lot of time left. This is actually one of the built-in slides, so you can talk about how the sun is undergoing its timeline, where it started out as just a big ball of gas and it slowly accreted. And because there was some inherent spin to that big ball of gaseous dust that was our proto-solar system, it started spinning. And the parts that were spinning in a certain direction kind of stayed in the disk. And the parts that weren't spinning collapsed down. So that's why our solar system all exists more or less in a flat plane, more or less, because the initial rotational energy of the solar system. There's a little bit of more detail. There may have been some other objects that encountered the solar system that caused perturbations that maybe led to our protoplanets and then eventually forming into planets. But generally speaking, that's where you are in the left side of this diagram. The sun did eventually condense, and once it got to a certain density, we started finding that really hot hydrogen was turning into really hot helium, and then it kicked things off in a pretty dramatic fashion. 4.5 billion years later, we're in the middle of our current sunspot cycle, just past the peak, we're pretty sure. It looked like it was extending, but I think it's starting to calm down, which is sad, but that's where we are. We got another 6 or 7 billion years left before the sun is going to undergo a transition into a red giant stage, at which point I really hope I've got a new vacation house somewhere around Neptune, because it's going to, we think we've got some hot atmosphere right now. Let me tell you what's going to happen when the corona gets here. No, I'm not going to, but we will expand out to the red giant phase. And because our sun is of a certain size, it's going to have enough to get to the red giant phase, where it will become bigger but cooler. And then it'll just keep going off. It's not big enough to go truly supernova. So it's going to just kind of collapse down into a dwarf star. And that's how it's going to end. Not with a bang, but a whimper. Is that a terrible thing? Not really, because we'll all be long dead by then. Our grandchildren's grandchildren's grandchildren will not be appreciably closer to that time than we are right now. So that's the great thing. Any questions so far? That is an example of some things you can talk about. If you're doing a presentation like this, especially on a cloudy day or a cloudy night or cloudy afternoon, comes up pretty often this time of year because sunset isn't until 8 o'clock and we go to the planetarium and the sun is still up when they come out. Not ideal, but there we are. Outreach times at schools or for Boy and Girl Scouts events, good opportunity to talk about this because the solar and stellar life cycle is a good topic for discussion. All right, here we can talk about, I'm not gonna spend a lot of time here. This is another one of the pre-built, pre-installed slides. I personally would recommend hiding this because it's not super relevant, but we can talk about the general shape and form of the solar system and how it relates to the galaxy, which is not really that much other than they're both disks and have stars in them. But we can talk about that. If you have a group that is inclined to discuss variable stars, as we mentioned before, you can talk about, while the fact that we don't have a variable star in our solar system, variable stars is how we figured out what the shape of the galaxy was by plotting the relative distance to various Cepheid variables and seeing what the distribution of the clusters they were in and how other stars were gravitationally bound to them. We kind of just plotted it out and realized it formed this particular shape. More relevant to this slide than it is to the topic of the sun, because our sun isn't very variable, but there we are. Questions here? I like the "you are here" arrow. I'm pretty sure there's some pretty robust error bars on that, but there we are. It's probably definitely on that side. Okay, this one's kind of fun. We can start talking about what we can see. Now, in general, when you're at an outreach event, you're going to be able to show the sun in what bands? Okay, hydrogen alpha is a good one. I love it. All right, visible. So white light. We look at the sun, if we look directly at it, we're going to see a yellow disk. It's yellow because of the presence of our atmosphere. If you were out in space, it would be a bright white light because that's how black body radiation works. I would pause for everybody to do the mental gymnastics to turn white light and black body radiation, but trust me, it works. Okay, we can see things in white light, which is the upper
upper left, and in hydrogen alpha, which is kind of lower left. Sorry, right, backwards. I don't know why, mirror, anyway. All right, so we're going to be, we can see the chromosphere and the photosphere. Photosphere being what we see with white light, chromosphere what we see with hydrogen alpha, which is looking at that very particular transition when hydrogen, stop me if you heard this one, hydrogen is a second excited stage, has a lot of energy. It gives off a photon and drops down to its first excited stage. That particular stage transition gives off that pulse of red light, which is what we see with our hydrogen alpha telescopes. There are other hydrogen lines. That is the one that most of us have telescopes that allow us to see. There are other options. There are probably two people, maybe more if, folks have had eye surgery in the room that have eyes that can make out really good the calcium K line. That's a deep blue. And unfortunately, if you're over about the age of 35, we start losing the ability to see that organically, but cameras can still capture it. I don't know anyone here who has a calcium K telescope, but if you do, I'd love to look through it. But I can't see that shade of blue, so I probably wouldn't see anything. The other things that you can see, especially if you've gone to a eclipse event, is you can sometimes see the corona directly, which is really cool, but you need to have a rock in the way of the sun to block it out so that you can see that coronal action. Otherwise, it's just not going to, anything that would block out the light of the sun enough is also going to block out the corona. Unfortunate, but true. If anyone has and knows of a way that we can see the corona directly from Earth, other than waiting for an eclipse, I'd love to hear it. But there are some ways we can see it just using some space-based telescopy. The SDO, we're going to talk about that. I went down about a six-hour rabbit hole looking at stuff about the SDO. We'll talk about that later. Any questions on what we can see? We're going to go into the details. This slide is built into the presentation, and it has pictures of different different things. Generally, with white light, you're going to be able to see what? Sunspots, absolutely. What can you see?
Faculae, you can see the light area.
Sometimes you can. And sometimes you can also
by the limb, anyway.
Right. Yeah. Because you have that limb darkening, which allows you to see a little bit more. Anyone know, is that an optical illusion? I mentioned limb darkening. I'm going to point with the arrow here. The fact that the sun looks a little bit different here, is that an optical illusion or is that a real thing?
No, you can only see so far through the atmosphere.
Absolutely.
And so you're seeing really a higher layer kind of there.
Yeah. Perfect. So when we're looking at the sun, we are seeing a certain depth into it. Really, we're looking through the sun's atmosphere. It's like when you get up on a foggy day and everything just seems kind of weird until you get to a certain distance and then it looks like a solid wall. Well, we're kind of seeing a little further because we're not looking through as much of the sun's atmosphere around the limb. So it's not looking quite the same. We're kind of seeing clouds on the sun. That's, if you think about it, clouds are really what the chromosphere is. Just clouds on the sun. Questions so far? All right, we're going to get in the meat here in a second.
Oh, no.
How do I move this? There we go. All right. So this is not part of the inherent presentation, but I think it's kind of neat, and I want to talk about it. The sun is not a solid object, obviously. It is not just a bunch of gas. It's made up of multiple layers, like onions or ogres. When we're looking at this, the different things are happening at different layers, and that's kind of neat. We can see certain layers. We can only infer things about other layers. At the middle of the sun, center of the sun, we're pretty sure, because we can't observe it directly, is the core, right? The only thing that is going to escape from the core that we can actually observe somewhat directly are solar neutrinos. I don't know if anyone in the room who has a solar neutrino telescope. If you do, I really, really want to see it, okay? Normally, these things are enormous pools with photomultiplier tubes that just happen to take advantage of the fact that neutrinos are slightly more likely to interact with fluorine atoms than they are with other things. So they flood these giant swimming pools. When I say swimming pools, I mean like abandoned salt mines under mountains in Italy. Yeah, with carbon tetrafluoride,
and wait for a neutrino to hit it, it gives off a pulse of light, shrink of radiation, so a cone of light that then hits a photomultiplier tube, and they can try and figure out where it came from. It's really neat, and they're not very common interactions. So that said, one, these telescopes are way too big, and two, they're infrequent enough, we're not going to be able to display one Saturday, Sunday. It's not likely. So the core, that's where those nuclear reactions that Gabe was alluding to take place, where hydrogen forms hydrogen one, gets together, makes hydrogen two. Sometimes it'll form helium three, or sometimes it'll form hydrogen three before it doesn't. There's a whole series of translations, but ultimately hydrogen gets built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. They Might Be Giants got that part right. Core of the sun is very hot, and the light that gives off doesn't get very far because the sun is really dense. We were talking about fog. The denser a fog is, the less distance you can see in it, right? We can guesstimate how foggy a day is by what our visual range is. Aviators can tell you what your visual range in any given sector is. The rest of us say, wow, it's really foggy out there. The sun is way too foggy for the light from the core to get very far. It goes like maybe a millimeter before it gets reabsorbed and re-emitted. So it can take literally years for a photon that is emitted through that nuclear reaction in the center to wander its way out of the sun. But that doesn't matter because the heat energy is traveling through that process, either by direct kinetic action, bumping into something else, or by translating that photon of energy. Everyone follow me so far? We're still in the center of the sun. It's really easy to find. It's the heaviest thing in the solar system. Okay, the next part is the radiative zone. That is where all that energy is slowly working its way out. It's hot. It's really hot. It's really dense, but not dense enough for that hydrogen to start fusing into helium. So it's really just the battery. It's that energy reserve where all that extra energy is happening and slowly moving its way out. It's the thermal bath that the core that's generating energy is pushing it into so it can make its way out. Think of that as like the null zone. It's just hanging out there doing its thing. It's not really producing anything energetically wise other than gravity that is causing that that other reaction we're talking about, friction further up. Good so far? Okay. Convection zone. This is where things really start moving. It's not as dense. It's not as hot. Energy is rising up into the convection zone, heating up the convection zone so that the hotter stuff is going to become slightly less dense. Slightly less dense things tend to rise. It rises up to the top of the convection zone where it can start interacting with the photosphere. And it can impart its energy into the photosphere that causes it to continue to rise, rub against things, and get hot. Everyone following me so far? This is still so deep in the sun that energy that's given off by it can't make its way out. The mean free path, the distance that it can follow before it gets reabsorbed is just too short. It's going to hit something because the sun is really big and really heavy. Even though we're talking about gas and plasma, there's just so much of it because it's so heavy, it pulls itself together. Good? All right. These are all the parts we can't see. Jeremy, why are you talking about them? Because it's cool or really hot. Anyway, now let's get to the visual surface of the sun. We're now miles out of the center of the sun. I think thousands?
Hundreds of thousands.
Hundreds? I'm not sure we're hundreds of thousands yet.
Tens of thousands.
Is it?
Yeah.
Tens of
thousands. Okay, tens of thousands. Yeah, I buy that. We're pretty far outside the sun until we finally reach a point where there is so little stuff between it, this particle of hydrogen that we are. I'm sorry, I'm sharing the screen. I can go wherever I want. That's fine. Where we're now so far out of the sun that the there's not enough stuff between us and our eyes on Earth and that particle on the surface of the sun that it's guaranteed to hit something. It might. It could still get caught by another particle of solar stuff, or a passing speck, or a comet. But it is possible that things that are in what we call the region of the photosphere, that we treat that as the effective surface. That's where we look and say, yep, that's the surface of the sun, because that's a thing that seems like a solid object to us. And that is what we're looking at with a white light telescope.
It is emitting in a black body way, which is why we call it a white light telescope. Even though it looks yellow to us, it is in fact emitting in all temperatures and colors of light. It just happens to be centered a little bit more in the yellow section of our eye, which evolved to discern that color because there's an awful lot of it. But it's white light. We can treat that like the surface of the ocean. If the ocean were made up of really, really, really hot hydrogen plasma, which fortunately it's not, we checked. Above that is kind of the solar atmosphere. Now, the solar atmosphere seems easy to talk about, but so does our atmosphere. There's a big difference between our troposphere and our stratosphere and our exosphere. The same thing is true of the next couple of layers of the sun. How am I doing on time? Oh, I'm over. I'm going to keep going unless you tell me stop. Okay, no one's telling me stop. Fair enough. Okay, but I will try and pick it up a little bit. All right, so the chromosphere is the next layer out. The chromosphere is what we're looking at with hydrogen alpha telescopes. That is where we're seeing the kind of the physical shape of the hydrogen, but it is the hydrogen that is churning and roiling and boiling. So it's the lumps and bumps and flares that are coming out of the photosphere are going to be making that physical shape. Think if the photosphere is like the surface of the ocean, the chromosphere is kind of like the clouds with different things that we can see on it. The effects of one are, however, going to chain over into the next. Interestingly, the chromosphere is where we start getting a little hotter, even though we're getting further away from the ultimate heat source. As we go above the chromosphere, we hit the transition zone. Why is it called the transition zone? Because it's convenient to call it the transition zone. A lot of different things happen in the transition zone. The temperature starts to go up. Why? We don't know. We have theories. The biggest theory is that the magnetic energy that drives a lot of the activity that we see in and on the sun is going to start translating energy directly into the transition zone and through it into the corona. We're not really sure. There's also theories of micropulses of energy that are basically like little nano bursts of energy that are just thousands, millions of times a second, just shooting extra energy into it, following those magnetic fields, so it doesn't distribute itself uniformly throughout the transition region and the chromosphere, but it does translate itself into the corona. But are we sure? No. That's why we send probes to figure it out, and the jury's still out. What we do know is as we go further out, the temperature goes up, and we're still not sure why, which is cool, because that means there's still stuff to learn. It's not zookeeping. We're still exploratory science. The unfortunate thing is, as we go from the transition layer into the corona, it becomes harder and harder to see things because, unfortunately, we're now talking about the UV spectrum and the extreme UV, and our at least for now, our atmosphere is still pretty good at blocking out an awful lot of that. So we had to put an observatory in space to take a look at it, and we have some images of what that can produce for us, and it's really cool. Questions so far? David. Yes.
Why are there red stars?
Ooh, that's a great question. Okay, so the question is, if the photosphere is always putting out white light, why are there red stars? Why are there blue stars? So the sun, much like all stars, is producing light in all wavelengths. Anyone heard of the black body radiation curve? In general, you're going to find that as function as wavelength and amplitude, you're going to get a distribution curve like this. There's a certain kind of peak wavelength that an object that is emitting energy just because it's hot is going to be putting out the most light in. And that wavelength is going to be dependent on temperature. If it is a yellow star, like Earth's yellow sun, it might give us a curve like this. If it's a red star, which is cooler, the curve may actually look like this. So it's putting out less high energy light, but because it's bigger, the whole curve might be shifted upward, but where it peaks out would be over here. This is our red star.
But it doesn't put out white light.
Well, white light is simply what happens when our eyes put it back together.
It puts out all frequencies.
but
correct. Yeah. And then when we have a blue star, it might look like that, where it's putting out more higher wavelength. Or did that answer your question?
Yes.
We say kind of generally we say white light, but it's really a matter of white light is a combination of all visible light spectrum added together. And what our eyes might interpret it slightly differently, more red, more blue, depending on the temperature.
All stars classified by the temperature.
Yes.
Ours is classified by the G2 yellow green.
I've
never seen the somewhat green.
I did consider adding in the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram, but I realized we just didn't have time for that.
That'll be next month.
But maybe we can wrangle either Rich or Dr. Hitt to talk about spectral classes again. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and move on. This is also something that I added in. It is not part of the basic, but this is something that I think we should all be really familiar with because these are the things we're going to be showing people when they're looking through our telescopes. This is the white light version. I've got the red light or hydrogen alpha light version coming up next. Sunspots. Obviously, these are, we know what these are. We see them a lot, at least right this time of the cycle. Give it 6 years and we're going to be, an exciting day will not be when Kent finds a 1.5 million mile long prominence. It'll be when we see more than three sunspots in a given day. But this is the thing. Sunspot is a case where we have a lot of magnetic fields that are kind of disrupting the convective flow and causing an area to get relatively cool. That it is magnetic effects that cause that to happen. It's not some weird change in the sun's convection, and that's good. About a month ago, I gave a talk on astrophage as it involved the movie Project Hail Mary. If sunspots came from something like that, we're in trouble. But in this case, it's due to temporary changes in magnetic fields. We already talked a little bit about limb darkening. And then we kind of also, I think, faculae were mentioned. Faculae, we sometimes talk about those in the chromosphere. Currently, while it's still accurate, we generally refer to faculae as existing in the photosphere now. Even though they are going to have impacts in forming plages in the hydrogen alpha band that we'll see. But faculae, they're the bright patches that are going to result out of the changes in magnetic fields. Just think of those as kind of the bright spots as opposed to the dark spots. And then granules are kind of neat. People think about the sun being a ball. The sun isn't a perfect ball. It's not a perfect sphere. If you consider the fact that if you take a pot of water and put it on the stove and get it boiling, it's going to start, the surface is going to start bubbling and rippling. Well, the granules are the sun's equivalent of the fact that it's a giant pot of water that doesn't have a container around it. It is its own container. Those bubbles and ripples are the effects of that convective action that's going on. That some areas are a little hotter, pushing up. Other areas are a little cooler, dipping back down. The granules are those really small ripples that we can see sometimes in white light if we're looking, if we're fortunate to have a big enough telescope. The downside is that in this area, because of atmospheric phenomena, especially humidity, it's rare that we're going to be able to get a good enough view. Kent, you have what do you think about this? I've not been able to see good enough conditions to really see granules. Daytime, there's just too much atmospheric turbulence around here. If you really want to see some really good solar features out here, I recommend going out to Back Bay West, Arizona, or Nevada, where it's drier. You can get a larger size telescope, hopefully not burn your eyes out. The other thing that we can see is sunspot groups. Sometimes you'll see the combination of large sunspots as well as faculae around them. Those are also going to correspond to active regions. That is a catch-all term for, hey, there's a lot of stuff happening here, a lot of magnetic fields that are kind of combining. Sometimes you will see either faculae or sunspots in pairs, usually one closer to the equator and one further away. That's because that's the polarity of the magnetic field lines that are causing it tend to cluster together. Questions here? This is another opportunity. People say, no, wait, stop, don't. We can call Uncle. Mm-hmm. There's also cookies. All right. Try and go quick. Hydrogen alpha is cool. That's one of the reasons I like bringing them to outreach. There's more stuff to look at than just sunspots. A couple of these are linked.
When we talk about a prominence is an arch of plasma, of hydrogen plasma that's arcing out above the surface of the sun. If it is on the limb, we call it a prominence. If it is on the disk, we call it a filament. On the limb, it looks brighter than space because it's giving off light of its own. That's where we call it a prominence because it is prominent. When it's on the disk, it looks darker because it is absorbing light from underneath it and then re-emitting it. So it's basically like a passing cloud. It looks relatively dark compared to the brighter sun underneath it, even though it is of itself quite bright. They are the same phenomena, just seen in different locations. And a really good day, you can see a prominence arcing out and then crossing over into a filament that's really big and wild. Sometimes you can go back into another prominence if it's near the limb and crossing towards the outside of the disk. That's a good day. And even on, usually when you get one of those, even Kent will say that one's a big one.
Maybe.
Okay. All right, active regions, same sort of thing we were talking about with white light. It's just a hotbed of magnetic behavior, but it looks really neat. And people are going to ask, what is that? Is it a whirlpool? It is not a whirlpool. You don't have to worry about Charybdis. There are no sun monsters that you need to worry about. It's just where you have a lot of magnetic activity. The aplage is, I have arrows, right? Okay. All right, so aplage is a bright patch. It's going to usually correspond to a faculae, but it is an area where you have a lot of magnetic concentration that's causing a lot of energy to kind of concentrate in one spot, and then it's going to move on. Maybe it's going to move on into the corona. Once again, we don't know. Another object that we're going to see is where we have something that's bigger than a granule but smaller than a filament. That's basically what a spicule is. It is a small, I don't want to say prominence, but it's a small feature that is caused by a small emission of plasma that may not necessarily cause that same arc. And then just like we have prominences on the disk, on the limb, and then filaments on the limb, we have fibrils or mottles are the same thing. They're just those little, like, a pulse, a small tendril sticking up, but not on the scale of a filament. We don't know what causes them. We don't think they're the same phenomena that causes the prominences and filaments, but we're not sure. This is still an area that is that solar physicists are trying to work out, but it might be. So we don't know. Questions on hydrogen alpha features? I'm going to try and work on finding either some images, and this is actually a call out to the group. If anyone has taken some solar astronomy photos, I know we have some solar astronomers and astrophotographers out there. If anyone has some good images that we own, because I stole these from NASA for this presentation, of these phenomena, I would like to put together an info card that basically looks like this, that we can have out white light and hydrogen alpha so that we can stick it out for people to look at when they're at Saturday, Sunday, and other solar events, that we can have available as a reference. So, there's this thing, and people can look back and forth and see it. George?
Did you mention spaceweather.com?
I wasn't, but I'll make a note to.
Yeah, there's a website, spaceweather.com, that are looking at the sun. Heliophysicists are looking at the sun all the time. They number these sunspot groups, and they track them as they go around the sun, as the sun rotates and these things move.
Yeah, and there's actually also sunspot groups in the active regions. They're numbered. It's a four-digit character. Yeah. I'll add a link for that. Okay. Now I'll ask you what that note means. Okay, so I mentioned that this is what we can see in these two bands. We're getting close, I promise. I realize this is going way longer than I expected. Sorry about that. The Solar Dynamics Observatory is a space-based platform that is looking at the sun in temperatures and wavelengths that we can't see here on Earth. The HMI segment is actually the magnetic imager, and the AII is the atmosphere imaging assembly. So we're looking at either the magnetic factors involved in actually ionized iron as it's present in the sun. They're tracking the magnetic effects of that for the first three images, Doppler, magnetogram, and the continuum, just basically how much of it there is. And then we're also looking at certain wavelengths of other emissions in the ultraviolet and extreme ultraviolet, various wavelengths, mostly of calcium, carbon, and different wavelengths associated with iron for some of the others that tell us about different what's going on at different temperatures, not necessarily because of those emission lines, but because of variant opacity. Turns out at different temperatures, hydrogen and iron are going to have their emission lines differentially absorbed. So we can see different layers based on what temperature we're looking at. And it goes all the way from about 4,500 kelvins, which is the temperature of the surface of the sun, all the way up to 10 million kelvins, which is the temperature of some of the really bright energetic jets of solar flares. It's really cool. You can actually see this in real time as well, the SDO, or the Solar Dynamic Observatory through NASA. I just want to put the caveat that these colors are false colors, so that you can quickly color code what you're looking for rather than necessarily the sun emitting in these particular colors. It's a aid for the observer, not, oh God, the sun just turned turquoise, which is probably for the best. That would throw my description of black body radiation right out. Now we're getting back to, and I'm trying to get back somewhat on track. I know you're all staying really for the door prize, but that's fine. One thing that we could talk about is that the sun is all these different features that we're seeing are due to magnetic fields. We've talked a little bit about them. Basically, if you see anything that's going on in the sun, why it's there, it's because of magnetic fields. The magnetic fields are going to cause that change in the way the energy is distributed across the sun. So it can change how much energy, how hot or cool it gets based on how those magnetic field lines are disrupting the flow of that ionized energy. And then we're not even talking about what happens with ionized or non-ionized helium. We can talk about that after the class. This should not be a surprise to anybody in here. If it is, that's fine. You can pretend that it's not. But the sun is on a more or less 11-year cycle for how complex its magnetic fields get. Basically, the sun is magnetically active, and it is rotating. And unfortunately for it, it is rotating at different rates, depending on how close you are to the pole, which causes the magnetic field lines to get more or less complex until the point where eventually the whole thing breaks down and it starts doing a reset, which is kind of neat. We are right now close to the peak of the magnetic variability, which means that we're seeing a lot of different solar activity. So come on out to Saturday, Sunday at the end of the month if you don't have your own solar telescope and take a peek, or just ask on the group, hey, I heard there's a lot of stuff Kent keeps telling us about sunspots or a lot of prominences. I'd really like an opportunity, and we can find a way to make that happen for you. Enough retired people in this room with solar telescopes that would be happy to share. I'm one of them. All right, questions on solar cycle? All right, this is actually built into the slide deck. Whereas my other cutaway of the sun was not, but this is what you can share with the group. It looks the same, just not quite as detailed or cool. Solar telescopes of various types. Solar weather, this is an opportunity. This would be a good place to plug George's topic of solar weather. They can talk about how far that is. And you can also talk about the fact that on NOAA, it will tell you what the likelihood of a aurora is. I myself was quite disappointed. We were nearing a pretty robust solar maximum this past winter, and we got nothing. And I think that's sad. So there we go. And then this is kind of a call to arms. You can go out and observe. Obviously, we're not going to go observe the sun right now because it is down. There's a big rock in the way. But different ways that we can do things, depending on what type of group that you're with. You can do pinhole projections, which I'm sure many of us did the last time we went eclipse hunting, reflected images, and then solar telescopes. The club has a bunch of, I don't know how many, probably still over 1,000 of the solar eyeglasses that you can use. And then we have the ability, this is a plug, to make a solar filter if you want to make one for your telescope. Or George showed us his solar funnel or sun funnel last meeting. We might, if there's enough interest, we might obtain the materials to start putting one of those together, but you need to have decent non-plastic refractor in order to make it work. So, yeah. You can put together a pretty robust image that's made up of various different projections, like the one I showed you from the SDO, because each one's going to show different ranges and temperatures. This image is actually a banner that we have for the club that we've set up at Saturday, Sunday, and others. It talks about the different bands that you can look at the sun in. And we didn't even get into the x-rays because that one's a little harder to look at. But there are definitely some satellites that have x-ray detectors that are pointing at the sun and such. So this is our dynamic sun, which is what this presentation came with, that particular toolkit. And then we also have our magnetic sun, which is probably a little bit more approachable and better for pointing out different phenomena until we can make our own. And that is my presentation, unless there are questions. And I realize I went like half an hour over, so thank you all for your patience. I can. Any other questions? Thanks, folks. I know, even though I didn't get it last time, somebody asked for a copy of it. We'll make sure that that's hanging and available in case you're looking at it. If you have questions, please let me know. I went into a pretty robust dig into the SDO because it's really cool. But that said, I will stop talking right now, other than we have a door prize. Who did not get a door prize ticket? It's a cool door prize. If you signed in, you should have one. The dwarf is not the door prize.
Oh, are you sure?
The door prize. No, the door prize tonight is a pair of binoculars. As I mentioned, Bruce Powers was unable to make it, so instead he sent binoculars that can see through time. These are a pair of Zumel 80 by 20s, 20 by 80s, so 20 times magnification, 80 millimeter aperture. There's a little bit of more in here, so but I mean, I think they're a single owner, probably really cool. But these and the carrying case they came with were donated for tonight's drawing. So that said, if you're here, even if it's your first meeting, if you're not an active member, you're eligible.
If you didn't get a ticket,
who didn't get a ticket? Okay, it looks like two.
Two.
And he's upset in the pants.
Oh, that's what I did.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Everyone else has one, right?
Jeremy, can we see the binoculars?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm sorry.
Oh,
yeah, there's the binoculars.
Yeah,
there
they
are.
Can
you show it to us out here in Zoom land?
Quite a zoom, 20 times. Oh, not that kind of zoom. Okay. Yeah, so 80 by 20. No, 20 by 80. That would be a weird set of binoculars. 20 by 80. Zoomel binoculars.
I'm sure you can see through the clouds with those things. Right?
I would definitely recommend a tripod for that, or at least a monopod.
Yeah. All right. The winning ticket is, we're not going paperless tonight, is 403.
Me.
Possibly one of the few people in the room that can make take advantage of the exit people associated with them. That's all we have prepared for tonight. I do thank you all for your patience. I hope it was worth the extra time. And if you were really just staying for the binoculars and you weren't Gabe, then I thank you for at least pretending.
Who won?
Gabe Dandrade won.
Thank you.
So with that, if please sign in if you haven't already. I look forward to seeing everybody at the picnic. And otherwise, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
I'll take that. Second?
Third.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Yay. Thank you, folks.
I don't know. I
I'm reluctant to give up the butchery. Yeah.